Welcome to the Voke Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new special episode of the Voke Podcast, in which I'll be talking yet again to professional voice actor and writer Harry S. Robbins, whom you guys might know best as the voice of Dr. Kleiner, some of the soldiers in Half-Life, or even the narrator from the Plague Incorporation trailer. Thank you so much for coming on, Hal, for this special Half-Life anniversary podcast episode. How are you doing?
Happy to be here. Among those credits, I think you could have mentioned Dota 2, if that's worth mentioning with the others.
Well, of course it is, but you know, I mean, I think all of these projects are just one of the many that you've done, if I can say that myself, you know. Since this is a Half-Life special episode, and we usually talk about Half-Life, but it's been 25 years since the release of this wonderful game. So, has your opinion changed on Half-Life after all these years?
I was always very pleased to be associated with it because there is substance behind it and much thought and wit. So that's an extra plus, even if it had been crude and awful for the money I would have been willing to work on it. But it was well written and intriguing. So I hope it is still going strong in its current form.
It indeed is. As a matter of fact, Valve just today released a special update for the game and a one-hour-long documentary talking about Half-Life, and Mark Laidlaw and Bill Van Buren, producers and, you know, writer at Valve, former writer, they also talked about you and how you got cast and, you know, great stories like that.
Well, I'm glad they didn't leave me out. But I've done a lot of different things in different areas, which,
yes.
For example, you know, I do this online show. Yes. We have one coming up on the 19th Sunday. After that, there's the chat room, and the fans can come in and we talk. And I was talking and I was telling about how I made a Coca-Cola commercial once. Yeah, in 1996 for Colossal Pictures, where they animated my little drawings and so forth. And while I was talking, this kid, I shouldn't say that, this person, whoever, I don't even remember who it was, who was in the chat room, got online and immediately found the Coca-Cola commercial. And I have it now. I could send it to you.
Yeah,
a 28-second
sure.
spot. I worked 2 weeks at Colossal Pictures on creating the little characters. This was pre-digital, of course.
So that was all animation.
It's animation. I don't know what techniques they used at that time, but they generally did standard film animation.
That is really fascinating. You know, I mean, since you've been in animation too, and I think you still are, and your artist work and everything, do you think this industry has changed over the years? If it changed for the better, you know, the technology and everything that, you know, enhanced over the years, do you think that's for the better?
I think it's made the tools more widely available, so more people are able to employ them. But as for everybody being an animator, I'm not sure that that is true. Because animation, if you look at the word, it means giving an anima, giving a soul, giving life. So you essentially act through animation if you're a really good animator. And maybe they're born, not made, but it certainly allows for more opportunity to practice that.
Yes, definitely. And I think the very interesting part of animation is when there is no voice involved, when it's just the movement. So I find that really interesting.
You saw that silly Chameleons movie, I suppose.
I have seen some scenes of it with you in it.
Well, do you remember, did you see the scene where the little creature goes into the boy's closet and turns into a woman?
Not
because
that
I animated that.
Oh, Okay. How did that go over?
Well, I like it. I find it lovable, that piece of animation. But one person suggested that we replace it with computer animation. But I think I would prefer to keep it there as it is. It was done with replacement animation. Physically, I personally carried the different replacements into the set and positioned them.
Okay. Well, was Chameleons like the only kind of movie that you've ever been to?
Been to? Well, I have a very strange filmography of all these different independent films and little scene films where I've done voice for them, like the Canadian documentary Grass, for example. Let's see, Susan Stern made a movie called Barbie Nation about the Barbie phenomenon many years ago, and I did a voice in that. And of course, there's the movie about Jack T. Chick called God's Cartoonist, where I do not like myself in it at all, but it's another thing where I got interviewed.
The Chick worldview, as I see it, is one which is doctrinally consistent with the views of the Baptists and Protestant groups most closely allied to the Baptists, where Christianity starts to become high church, like Episcopalian, for example. It begins to deviate a little bit from the Chick world. Certainly, when you cross over into being a Roman Catholic, as far as a Chick view is concerned, you're no longer even a Christian.
Are these like animated movies or like live action films?
There's some animation in Grass, but for the most part, they are documentaries,
Oh,
live action. I
documentaries.
should also mention the movie Head Trip, which has been remastered and re-edited and is now showing on the 19th, exactly at the same time as my show, so I can't go, at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco. And that is a movie that I narrated NM in a little bit.
It all started with the Doggy Diner Heads when the San Francisco Cacophony Society salvaged these advertising icons from a vanished chain of hot dog stands. Now they would follow the bus all the way to New York.
Well, you have a great voice for narration. I'm so sad it's not widely used in the industry because you really have this very interesting tone to it, which just really gives a lot of personality to any character that you voice, especially the scientists, you know. And looking back at Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2, the two characters, you know, the scientists and Dr. Kleiner, were so different from apart each other, even though they are pretty much supposed to be the same. But the scientists, they all almost sounded like they had a lower tone when you were doing them, and Dr. Kleiner was this higher tone character with more positivity.
I do change tones when I have to. When I'm reciting Paradise Lost, for example, when Satan speaks, I have a lower tone for him.
You see, speaking of Satan and everything, I've seen your filmography, and I know I have heard of the Church of the Subgenius, but if you know a random fan, a Half-Life fan, for example, or any fan of yours, you know, would just look up your filmography and see the Church of the Subgenius. You know, it is a really interesting title, which could refer to something weird happening in your life. I hope, you know, that it's not considered rude, but I just need to say that it was a bit weird to me.
What in particular, the Church of the Subgenius itself, or my position in
The
it?
Church of the Subgenius, like, what is
Oh,
it?
well, it's an
It sounds
organization.
like a cult, if you don't mind me saying so.
We put the cult in culture, or the culture in cult. The word cult is from the Latin colo, meaning to join together, as in the word collation or collection. A cult is simply those who are brought together in some way. But that being said, we are an organization of mockers and smart Alex. We are structured around the various rituals that the Church of the Subgenius has developed, and they contain a method of expression and a series of symbols which are understandable. Some of them have even leaked out to the outer world. But there are a number of books, some of which I've contributed to. The book of the Subgenius, the original book, is still in print, but the one I would recommend people try to get, and it's not hard to get, is Revelation X, the Bab Apocryphon, our second volume. There's a lot more art by me in that one, and they're both interesting. And what was the third? The Cyclopedia of Slack. What was that, the fourth? At any rate, I also wrote a short story, an H.P. Lovecraft pastiche, which appears in the fiction, the book of Subgenius fiction called... Oops, what is it called? This is a memory lapse. It's called Three-Fisted Tales of Bob.
Oh, wow. Holy
In addition, there was a comic book called Bob's Favorite Comics. It was printed by Ripoff Press back in the day, and I have some work in that. And it is a very entertaining comic. On the cover, it shows J.R. Bob Dobbs in hell handing you a glass of ice water. But all the copies of this comic were stored in a warehouse in the East Bay, in the San Francisco Bay Area, as it turned out, right next to an illegal Chinese fireworks factory, which exploded and destroyed the whole building and all of the run of the comics. So there's still some around, but they cost like $25, I don't know, more than that these days to get a hold of. The Reverend Onan Canobite of the church has some. He publishes the church in-house newspaper called the Dobbstown Mirror. But I'll be happy to answer any question about the Church of the Subgenius or anything else for that matter, since I am a professional question answerer.
Yeah. That's you on my show. Yes, in your Ask Dr. Hal show.
Yes.
Yes. And what exactly do you talk about in these shows? Is it something a very specific related, or is it like all sorts of things?
Well, the thing about this show, which was created by Chicken John Rinaldi back in 1998 at Burning Man, is that the audience asks me questions. The audience must write, each person has the opportunity to write down a question, put it on a slip of paper, which we provide, in an envelope, which we provide, which with some money that he provides, and then that's sent up to the desk where the moderator, it was Chicken, would open them all, organize them, and then ask them to me in an order that he thought was the most entertaining. So that was the basis, but we have other things. We have other gags, guest performers, we have video, audio, and the monster movie moments, like on the current show, which I narrate.
Mm-hmm. Do you do all that from home?
This current version of it, yes. I haven't done the live show since COVID started, except in other states. I did it in Ohio and New York. I traveled around this year. I was supposed to go to Florida, but I caught COVID. So I did the show in those states, but here I can only do it on Zoom, or actually we're on Twitch. We are using both Zoom and Twitch. Well, it's very easy to get there.
So, I mean, yeah, so you've been traveling, you know, around the states to do this show, which means that there is a demand for this show. People like it.
Barely enough for them to pay for me to get there and give me a little money. I hope they don't regret it afterwards.
Oh, well.
I do also go to the Starwood Festival, the pagan festival in the United States that I've been going to it. I assume they'll want me to come to it again, as well as the Burning Man gathering. I did it in Arizona also, the Ask Dr. Hal show last year. I just remembered.
Where does this Hal name come from?
Hal is the nickname or shortened form for Harry. Harry is my name. Hal is the shortened form. If you're familiar with Shakespeare's Henry IV, part one and two, Prince Hal is the name given to the character who was actually Harry, or Henry V, since the name Harry is cognate and a different version of the name Henry. So Henry, Hal, Harry, Harold are all related. However, my actual name is none of those things, but Harry. And I've always been called Hal, though I let people call me whatever they feel comfortable with.
That's a very simple question answered in a very long tale. But that is why you are a professional question answerer.
Well, I hope the answers can actually be entertaining. But that is the trick. The idea is not to be a bore, provide an answer which is actually useful or helpful. That seems to amaze the audience the most of all. Of course,
it certainly amazes me.
I can't promise a right answer. I just give them an answer, which I hope is entertaining, and it's as right as I can make it.
A lot of people usually say when they close their eyes and they listen to your voice, they can imagine Dr. Kleiner speaking to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not surprising since I did the voice of the character.
Yes, of course. Getting back to Half-Life. So you do Half-Life 1 in like 97 or 98. So Laidlaw, your friend, calls you up, and apparently you call Valve, and they are amazed by your voice.
Did that happen? Maybe. I know I went to the Microsoft's campus to record the first part of the show, and I was actually there for 2 days, but later on I recorded everything at Polarity Post Studios in San Francisco with the supervision of Mark and some others. I tried to be a one-take wonder in the studio and have as few retakes as possible.
Would you usually read the lines beforehand, before actually reading them out loud?
I would look at them, certainly. I was also given certain liberty to improve, improvise, that's what I meant to say.
Oh, okay.
Some of the dialogue. But okay. I was always guided, and I was always listened to.
Yes, of course. Have you had any previous experience with, you know, voiceover? Because, you know, that was kind of a new thing at this time. And so I'm not sure if you've done any voice work before Half-Life.
From the early 80s onward, I was on the radio weekly on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, California. And I'm still heard there, but I'm not there live. My voice is mixed and goes on in the Puzzling Evidence show.
Were you like an announcer or like a host of that radio?
I've been hosts of shows that I've been the host of variety shows and circus shows and things like that. So it's all a mode that one can easily fall in.
Okay.
Fall into. But I had the experience with radio, the experience with the drama, since I was a playwright for a time and wrote a number of plays and musicals and a light opera and other things, a lot of which I appeared in, and was expecting to continue that career when I came out to California and went to San Francisco. But as things turned out, no one wanted to do it out here. And I very gradually got back into theater, but for a long time, I was simply concentrating on art.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so you did this Half-Life thingy in 98. I'm not sure if you thought much of it at the time. But then, like, 6 years later, then you are brought back for Half-Life 2. Or maybe, mm-hmm. maybe not 6 years later, but, you know, you knew that you were getting brought back to Valve to record again for another Half-Life game. So were you surprised when, you know, that time came again? Because I don't think you thought that you would be back for another Half-Life thingy.
Well, I didn't entertain any thoughts about it or not, but of course I was always happy to do the work because the pay was great, though there are no residuals or anything like that involved. There was also the difficulty of having to be a member of the American Federation of TV and Radio Artists, which has since merged with the Screen Actors Guild, as you probably know.
So that's SAG-AFTRA, yes.
Yes. Now, I was, you know, when you work in Hollywood, they take your first check as the dues, and you have to keep paying the dues. And for a while, I wasn't doing the voice work, and the dues were heavy to pay, so I stopped paying them. Now, when I started again the second time you mentioned, they were interested in having me, so they just paid the dues, which was good, since when I started in Hollywood I had to send the paperwork to be paid up to Oregon, I believe, and there it would have to wait at their office until they finally sent me a check. And there was this one woman there, this old lady who controlled it all. Once I got tired of waiting for the check, and I just called her and said, you know, hello, my name is Hal Robbins. I worked on this TV show, and I haven't gotten my check. And she said, oh, well, here it is, right here on the desk. I'll just send it to you. So it was good that I made that call. I have been lax in paying the dues, and so that might be now a barrier to me working for them again. I don't know. I was involved with the TV show, The Conspiracy Zone, with Kevin Nealon, which I wrote for and did behind-the-scenes work for, and also appeared in a couple of episodes. I would always appear briefly off to the side as a sort of a gag, and I did the announcement describing the show at the beginning and the outro at the end, and it was interesting to work on that because we had a lot of famous people coming through as guests. But I must say, I enjoyed more than the famous ones the absolute weirdos that we got out of the woodwork, because the show was called The Conspiracy Zone, and it was all about strange conspiracy theories. I had worked on a comic book about conspiracies for DC Comics called The Big Book of Conspiracies. I also worked on The Big Book of Death, another interesting movie that they did. Okay. But because of my work for that, I was considered an expert on conspiracies, which, of course, I'm not. But I went there and I did the homework. I did the homework, so I was able to, you know, do OK on the show. Mm-hmm. We ran two seasons, and then we were replaced. We knew things were bad when the people from the network office came in and said, we just love what you're doing. Don't change a thing. You know, the show is great. Oh, yeah. And we all looked at each other and thought, oh, shit, you know, we're done for. And we were. We were replaced with The Man Show with Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel, the one with women with big breasts jumping up and down on a trampoline in slow motion. The network itself also changed from being TNN to Spike, which I think it is now.
Oh, that is possible. Did you, so I believe this was after Half-Life, was it?
It was in the early millennium sometime.
So you were still okay with SAG-AFTRA and had no dues at the current time of working on this stuff?
Oh, well, at that time, I had to pay them, and I did pay them, and I had enough money to pay them because I was working on a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, yeah, I now see your point. But there are some
questions. I'm just here, you know, working on my own little projects. I don't have that kind of dough.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I bet you must be happy to just get by. You know, I mean, it must be hard.
I don't know how I do it, but so far, so good.
Well, let's hope nothing bad will happen to you, because what will happen then?
Yes, I hope nothing bad happens to all of us.
Yes. You know, so Half-Life 2 gets released in 2004. 2 years later, Episode 1, where Dr. Kleiner appears on this PA system.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, it's Episode 2, where it ends for Dr. Kleiner, and we still haven't heard of him since 2007. And then Mark Laidlaw, you know, has his departure from Valve, I think, sometime mm-hmm. in 2017 or so. So do you think uh-huh. that also might be a reason why you were not brought back because of Mark's departure, who was your friend?
Well, he created the character and probably has the most connection with him. And so it naturally occurs to him to create storylines involving Dr. Kleiner. But as it is, they left... at least one thing taken care of, and that was shooting Hedy into space, which was never resolved.
Well, yes, that is true. That is still something that needs to be resolved. But at one point...
What do you think?
Yeah, in Half-Life Alyx, the new Half-Life that was released 3 years ago, which is, wow, it already been 3 years, you know, there was a model found of Dr. Kleiner, which means it implied that he was supposed to be in the game at one point, but he was cut, unfortunately.
Well, I'm available, as I've said before. If yes. they want to have me do a cameo or something, you know,
that'd be delightful.
Solve the problem with the SAG after dues.
Yes, of course. I mean, Valve, I think, would be... I think they could take care of all that. You know, I mean, they have that kind of dough, like you said.
That's true. May it happen. In the meantime, I'm glad people are still enjoying it. I think it's a thought-provoking game and fun.
Yes, it has this very interesting storyline, and for some reason, all the time Half-Life is brought up, I think of you, because for some reason, you really have this mind of a genius. Whenever I'm speaking to you, I'm always interested in hearing something new from you, and whenever you do speak, then I, you know, just think of Dr. Kleiner and what could be happening to him at this current moment in the Half-Life universe.
Well, I'm sure Dr. Kleiner was a well-paid specialist after working for Black Mesa.
I would love to see him wear a bandana like yourself. I mean, that is a really cool concept, I need to say.
Oh, that would be interesting, yes, wouldn't it?
Is there a style reason behind you wearing the bandana, or is it just something that you really like, enjoy?
My girlfriend gave it to me. I always cover my head when I go out, and sometimes I leave it on inside. There's nothing worse than being sunburned on the top of your head if you don't have any hair there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the itching, the unpleasant sensation. So, you know, that's why you have hair. You're supposed to be covered.
Yes, understandable. But I remember I've seen a lot of pictures of you wearing hats, so you must be really mm-hmm. a classy man.
Yes, bald people wear hats, but there's a very good reason, because you have got to cover your head, and more people should protect their necks. I think there's a lot of minor skin cancer that is happening because people don't understand the sun can be very intense and more intense these
Of
days
course.
than it used to be.
But you've always had this style of just class. I mean, all the pictures of you on the internet are just, it's like you're a man from the 1800s, like, I mean, you really have the style of like a class act, really elegant, if I can say so.
Well, thank you. That is kind.
Well, it is something. And I need to tell you this. I often get told that I have a similar tone to your voice.
There you go. You're getting too close, you see.
Yeah, I have no intentions of replacing you or anything.
Well, you might have to.
There
Who
is
knows?
only one Hal.
How interesting. Just look at that.
Do you know who ate all the donuts? Don't shoot! I'm with the science team.
That is really cool, Hal. How does it feel to be back in the science business?
Well, the back in the corporate science business, the secret government science business, is different than being a natural philosopher and private
Oh,
experimenter.
definitely, definitely. All right, we can move on to the next one.
Oh my God, we're doomed. Oh my God, we're doomed. Like so. Hello, Dr. Freeman. It's good to see you. No, get it off me. Get it off. Get it off.
And there it is, the famous line. Yeah, I mean, all these lines are just, they're so, a lot of them are very just generalized, but when the fans hear you say it and see you say it, it just becomes, the whole picture becomes so complete. And these were just lines for you 25 years ago, and now they're just.
Yeah, well, I wish the fans would unite in requesting that I be returned to the game.
Do you think that would actually have some sort of an impact on things?
It good. I don't see how it would hurt because after all, it's done for the fans, but they are probably interested in developing more fans than they have. Come in, Cooper. Do you copy? Forget about Freeman. We're abandoning the base. If you have any last bomb targets, mark them on the tactical map. Otherwise, get the hell out of there. Repeat, we are pulling out and commencing airstrikes. Give us targets or get below. Shepard, you've made it. I take it you didn't find Freeman? Forget it, Corporal. We are pulling out. The airstrike has started. Get to the hangar while we await evac. Let's see. The massless field flux should self-limit, and I've clamped the manifold parameters to CY base and LG orbit fold, Hilbert inclusive. Yeah, I kind of bobbled that one, so I should try it again
Well, you
if.
are a one-take wonder, so at least we see that it doesn't
Well, you
always work
can't
out
get
for you.
always get it right. Let me try again.
Okay.
Let's see. The massless field flux should self-limit, and I've clamped the manifold parameters to CY base and LG orbit fold, Hilbert inclusive. That's right, Barney. This is a red letter day. We'll inaugurate the new teleport with a double transmission. We owe a great deal to Dr. Freeman. Even if trouble does tend to follow in his wake. We owe a great deal to Dr. Freeman, even if trouble does tend to follow in his wake.
Sounds.
Commencing autopsy 3, time 2104. 27-year-old female infected with unknown pathogen. Blood analysis indicates virus. Provisional name is Pax 12. Deceased had traveled in China before returning home 2 weeks ago. That must have been pre-quarantine. Unknown if had contact with livestock, but I can definitely see evidence of insect bites. Deceased had reported coughing and sneezing with a high fever. I'm seeing a nasty rash, some abscesses around the abdominal cavity, clear signs of immune suppression. Cause of death appears to be catastrophic organ failure. Findings match reports coming out of China. This is highly concerning. The deceased may still be infectious. I'm halting the autopsy in order to notify the authorities. Request a full lockdown of this facility, effective immediately.
Well, that is the Plague Inc. trailer, and I'm sad that you weren't in the rest of the game, just in the trailer, because I think it would have fit if you would have just commented on the game and what is happening in the...
Well, maybe that guy was infected and wouldn't have been around to be in the rest of the game.
Well, maybe, but it definitely would have cleared some of your finances at the time.
Oh, that's for sure. Definitely.
Special guest incoming. We have Dr. Kleiner on the line. Welcome, Dr. Kleiner. I know you're a very busy person, but I'm glad that you could find a minute or two for us. Welcome.
Greetings and salutations.
Okay, so I know that we don't have much time, but our first question would be is, when did your fascination for science start?
Oh, and I was a very small lad. I was always concerned with the hidden workings and wonders of what I conceived of as the invisible world. And much, of course, is invisible unto us.
Yes. There are some reports that say that you were teaching Gordon Freeman. Later on, you became colleagues with him. What was your reaction to, you know, Gordon succeeding at his PhD and, you know, just being successful?
Mr. Freeman was a very apt pupil, but he had the willingness to do the homework, if you will forgive the expression, not only to understand things which concerned the discipline exclusively of the high energy realm of physics, of which he was a master, but also things from outside that specialty, which I believe informed his skill, which we all admire, to think quickly and decisively.
And effectively, of course, yes. Gordon's first day in Black Mesa, when the resonance cascade occurred, wasn't really a nice day for you in the world of Half-Life. How are you experiencing that currently?
I'm somewhat weary at this juncture to discuss the morality of that event. In order to make an omelet, they say one must break eggs. And ideally, in science, we would have no such experiences. However, our understanding has been exponentially expanded by this event. However, its tragic elements may not be ignored.
Of course. Since now, I do need to say, in case you didn't know, because you're stuck in the past, unfortunately, the voice actor for Dr. Magnuson has passed away last year. Do you think you could say anything about that?
He contributed much to the game. It's hard to consider it without him. That's quite unfortunate. But the longer you live, the more you must expect to lose people.
Too right, too right. And, okay, who is your favorite companion, Dr. Klein?
Well, I'm a somewhat solitudinous individual. I became fond of Heddy, the head crab, who had been rendered fit for a human companionship. Evolution gave her formidable qualities, and she herself should not be blamed for them. But the life of the mind does not often offer the opportunity for much socialization and that sort of recreation.
We are very thankful for your time, Dr. Kleiner, but if I had to say, and if I had to tell you, that there are more Dr. Kleiners in different universes, and I'm one of them. What would you say to me?
Well, I think it's a pretty fancy and very likely correct that each turn of an atomic nucleus produces a different possible variant of a vector into simultaneously existing realities.
Is there anything you would like to tell our fans of the Vogue podcast, Dr. Kleiner? Anything? A message?
Well, thanks for keeping the faith and understanding that the road to enlightenment may be difficult and frightening, but ultimately proves to be a great reward.